Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 4th, 2013. Happy New Year. It's the greatest PokerCast ever to assemble online. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You think people get pissed off when we change the intro every once in a while? You think they just want to hear the same droning furniture every week or what? Well, this is a fun week for us. We actually had our home game again. Now, home games have been kind of rare lately.
Yeah.
But when we get together, it's a lot of fun. And had a couple of players show up at this game that hadn't showed up in the last one when we introduced six-card hold'em. So those players may have contributed to this next fact, but really, we promoted it on the show saying it's a great show, big pots, a great game, I mean, big pots. But you know what? We've discovered that it's really only a good game if you're playing fairly shorthanded or if you have a decade to play it. Because
now let's be clear, you
it took a long time.
That decided this. The rest of us are fine with it, but as usual, you find something to whine about at every game.
And I had people on my side.
This is the soapbox
for this week. I had people on my side. Here's the deal: if you're playing with a timer, hey, you can play this game as much as you want because you'll get three hands in and say, "Hey, we timed it. We gave it a dedicated 15 minutes, like we do to all the other games." But when you play it as it has to go all the way around the table, you could be there for an hour playing six card hold'em. That's how it felt, man. It took forever.
Yeah, you think anywhere to be?
No, I know, but think about it. Really, if you're playing in a home game and you want to play as many games as you can, as many hands as you can, because you're playing, a home game for Skittles, you don't want to spend a good 30 minutes on one round of a game. When you want to change it up. And here were some of the things that contribute to that. First of all, you got to deal out six cards. Okay, so if you have eight guys at the table, the dealer has to sit out. So now that's another thing. One player doesn't get to play every hand.
Never a problem, in my opinion.
Which is fine. I mean, that is fine. I don't mind it being shorthanded, but seven is the max you can play with. Then it takes 25 minutes to deal six cards. And then they have to take 10 more minutes to figure out how they're going to lay these hands down. And then you do the betting. And then you have to decide which pair you're going to throw away. And everybody has to, oh yeah, I forgot I have to throw a pair. And it's just like the anti-argument I had a couple of weeks ago. If you're not used to playing the game, it takes you forever to discard. Then you got to do the round of betting. The turn comes. Then you got to discard again. They say, oh yeah, I forgot I have to discard again. By the time the hand is over, the sun has set. It's crazy. But I still like the game. I love the game. I love the thinking in it. I love the... And it's funny because we were all talking at the beginning. We're like, there's no way we're going to fold a hand. How can you fold a hand? And then I fold the first three hands. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't find three hands to play.
None of us could believe it. So.
I know. It was ridiculous.
I could have found three hands to play within those three hands.
But everyone pretty much goes to the flop in that game, and you do have some pretty decent pots, but it really does take a really long time. Do you still enjoy it as much this time around?
I always enjoy it. I think it's got a lot of strategic elements to it.
Strategic.
It's not necessarily a carnival game like some of these other things that we do. I mean, even double flop is carnivalish,
yeah.
I think. And I guess you can make a case that this is. But I don't think it is. I mean, I think here it's three times the strategy.
Yeah.
Involved.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's carnival at all. I mean, I think... It's not much different than, say, a type of an Omaha, or per se, but it's just that you have to get rid of your cards. So you do that in Tahoe, you do it in Crazy Pineapple, but you do it in Crazy Pineapple and whatever. So, I like the game. I mean, I definitely like it. I just, oh my God, it just seems like this time around it took forever for us to get through it. And we also played double flop Pineapple, too, right? Crazy Pineapple.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so we had to throw a card away, but you had two flops, which could drive you crazy if you have aces on one board, but you have a flush draw on the other, and that was kind of a pain. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoy Scott Hold'em. My recommendation, though, is to just have a timer or play it shorthanded.
You can play speed poker rules, like that casino down in South Florida, the speed poker now.
Speed poker, yeah.
You have to act on your hand within, I don't know, 30 seconds or something, which actually doesn't seem all that quickly to me.
Yeah, it actually is pretty good amount of time.
I don't think anybody took longer than 30 seconds to act in 6-card Hold'em. It's just that everybody... Now, you're not getting anybody to fold except for Cosenza.
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody stays into the flop, and most everybody stays in the turn before you start weeding out the pretenders from the contenders.
There was only one hand that I folded that would have won. So, I mean, out of all the ones I folded, and it wasn't that big of a pot.
But you don't know that. Had you been in?
No, that's true. But, I mean, at the end, I had the best hand.
Abilities to drive the rest of us out.
Well, I had the best hand at the end if I stayed in. That's all I know. And it wasn't like it was online where those weren't the cards that were going to come. Those were the cards that were coming, so... but it was a good home game, though. We had a good turnout, and you had a nice day, and I actually put together a winning session with a very fortunate hand, and it was cool. We had a good time.
Absolutely, a lot of fun.
So it was the holiday weekend, obviously, and we tend to get a lot of work done during the holidays, but I had some family people in town and some other people off that were coming over, so I took some time off. And so at the end of it all, you know, it was New Year's Day, and, you know, everyone had just gone home, and I said, I'm going to relax a little bit, put the TV on, and I'm flicking through the channels, and here is this Sin City Rules show. Have you known about
Sin
this?
Sin City Rules, or Sin City Rules?
Nah, Sin City Rules.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not rules. I'm sure you've heard of this show. I don't know.
Actually, I haven't. That's why I asked you.
Oh, okay, good. Well, it's a lot of these powerful Las Vegas women.
All right.
And most of them are very catty, or they have rivalries. But they're all dolled up. They all put
on... Can men be catty?
I don't know.
I think they can. I guess so. It seems like a word that's only been used for women, so...
Yeah, I guess they could be. But these women were rivals, too. A lot of them were... Some were friends. So it was like these kind of small groups of friends who get together with other groups of friends, so there's this little sort of fringe relationship between the two groups, but most of them are rivals with each other, and they say all these nasty things about each other. And so, first of all, I don't even care about that. But, of course, the attraction for me is that Jennifer Harmon is on this show. So I thought, okay, well, maybe we'll get a peek into the poker world, see how rough it is for her, maybe we'll see some of the other poker players playing in, maybe see our magazine on a shelf somewhere, have some fun with it or something, I don't know. But to be honest, it was mostly just women getting together for some meal and arguing. And I was very turned off by it. I had no desire to watch it anymore. But I thought, okay, let me watch Jennifer Harmon. So I turn it on. The first thing is Jennifer Harmon gets together one of her friends, and she explains in one of those voiceovers and then to her friend that her female problems are continuing for now. It's going on 2 months straight. And I'm like, did she just say what I thought she said? And she's telling us, all her biological problems that are going on with her body and stuff. And I'm saying, oh, my God, why is Jennifer Harmon doing this show, first of all? And then now she's telling us all these really intimate, private details about her health and her life. And I'm just like, oh, my God, Jennifer, don't do this. Don't do this show. And, of course, it's too late. She's done it, and she's already let the cat out.
It'd be awesome
if
it was live, and she was actually listening to you.
Oh, my God. It was so brutal. I am never going to watch the show again. I'm just not. And, she actually got it. She's a little feisty in it, too, which is kind of good. I mean, there are people arguing about something, and she's like, well, I'll tell you why. And they're like, why, Jennifer? She's like, well, because you liar. You're a liar. You lied. And I'm like, whoa. No, she didn't. But other than that, I was just like, okay, this is really kind of just women who have way too much money and way too much time on their hands yelling at each other. And I really thought that Jennifer Harmon, is going to be like, and I'm sure the other shows they do. I mean, one of the episodes was billed as she's had a losing session for so long, and she's regretting coming home and telling Marco that she's lost all this money or something. And I just thought, wow, this is, typical, reality show stuff. But I just didn't expect that, and I thought, oh my God, TMI, way TMI, and it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. I can't understand for the life of me I mean, does she is she that desperate for money that she has to do this show and put her personal life out there like that? I don't think so. There's no way she's hurting for money that much. That she, I mean, how much could they possibly pay her on TLC? I mean, really. I mean, they're not paying her $1 million for this. They're probably paying her maybe
yeah,
five figures.
Yeah, but keeps her out in the ether there.
Oh, man.
In people's minds.
Does so, she I mean, need to be in the
reciprocal
ether?
Reciprocal.
Does she need that? I mean, really, she plays high-stakes poker.
I don't know her.
Oh, my God. I know. I'm just trying to, you know, speculate here. It's absolutely – the show is not very good. I mean, it could be good if you get tied up into that kind of thing. I don't really like to sit there and watch people yell at each other and argue and call names. And then on top of that, half these women have so much makeup on. They look like rodeo clowns. So I don't know. I am not endorsing this show at all, and I hope Jennifer doesn't, you know – get too much backlash from it.
Now, see what you did though by talking about it on the show is you completely endorsed it. Because
yeah,
now everybody's going to want to watch this to see the train wreck you described. So,
well, that was my, you know, actually Jennifer asked me to talk about it on the show. So, of course, that's not true. But really, when it was the first thing that hits you too. You put it on and she announces this very intimate, you know, health issue. And I'm just like, oh my God, did she just say that? Why is she doing this show? You know, I just felt really bad. But anyway, I'm not telling you to watch it, so don't watch it.
I gotta watch it now. You can't tell me not to watch it now.
You can't unring a bell. So anyway, that was my holiday weekend. Home game with you and TMI with Jennifer Harmon.
Well, you know, for a show all about the everyday player, we seem to be talking about pros a lot today. But I thought this was an interesting story from one of the San Francisco newspapers on Joe Seebach, who I always thought was one of the more interesting poker players. You know, he's taken some time off, really. I don't think completely off, but certainly hasn't been all poker 100% the last couple years. And I was interested to hear that he actually went to a winery up in he's moved up to the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, mm-hmm. And he worked at a winery for like an entire year, doing the absolute gruntest of grunt works in the winery, working from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m. daily. I don't know, stomping grapes like Lucy, but you know, stuff along that line. And he just really wanted to learn something else. And I thought this was interesting on a couple of things. One, I think it just shows kind of the dedication of some poker players, or at least what poker does to some people, is that drive to succeed at everything you do.
Yeah.
And he's not the only example. There's been other people that have kind of, you know, taken their poker talents and done something completely different. But, I mean, this is really completely different. I mean, running a winery, that's wild. And just totally immersing yourself in it, which I think a lot of these poker players were really successful because they did. They just threw themselves 3 feet first into poker, and that's how they became very successful. And then I think just kind of humbling, you know, that he's a guy that I want to say he was hurting for money. I mean, he wasn't that successful as a poker player, but certainly very successful, and could have made a great living his entire life playing poker probably. And decided he wanted to be a success at something else. I don't know. I don't know if you saw the article, but I thought that was fairly interesting.
I did. I read the article. The most interesting line, the first one, says calling him a former pro. So yeah. I'm wondering if he did actually give up. I mean, I don't know if he's given up or not. And, you know, they did say, hey, there are poker rooms in the area. And he said that's just not what he's about right now. And you know, he wants to be able to do something else. So I do think that he's probably given up poker. According to that article, it makes it sound like he's given it up for at least a while. And, you know, I think he's very consistent with this sort of action, because the first time I interviewed him years ago, when we were still just the show and not the magazine at Foxwoods, you know, he made it pretty clear then, too, that, you know, his life isn't just about poker. He loves to travel and he loves to see the different, you know, the different cultures and even the different types of weather around the country. He loved going to Foxwoods because, you know, you live in Vegas and everything, you don't see the trees change color and the, you know, the foliage and all that. So, you know, I think this is real consistent for his character. He's always done different things. Now, I know a lot of people have issues with him because of the whole ultimate bet thing and how they thought he knew everything and should have done more and whatever, but, you know, whatever. I'm not saying anything good or bad about him. I'm just saying this is consistent with his character and things that he's told me in the past. Every year I see him, he recognizes me. Every year he waves to me and talks to me, and So, I mean, he's real down to earth and, you know, real open about his life and everything. And I think this is very interesting. I it's a weird thing. I would never put that together with anyone, you know, who plays poker for a living. He did try to draw some, you know, correlations between poker and the wine business, and some of them were kind of stretched. But yeah, I read the whole article, and interesting how, you know, you sit there for 12 hours at a table and grind, and you got to be mentally tough. And he said there was still the same kind of thing doing wine. You know, you got to, you're working a 12-hour a day. You got to stay focused. You know, it's not, you know, it's not, you can't just fake your way through that, you know. And he was getting in there and doing some of the kind of loosey type of things. They were talking about the grapes, you know, how he had to make sure that they kept coming down for the hopper or whatever it was. And so he was definitely doing some grunt work there. Pretty remarkable stuff. And he moved there too. So, I mean, he's taking it seriously. It's not like he's just renting a condo or something. He bought a home there. So
yeah, that's what I said. Just total dedication to a brand new career. And I don't know really where it's going to go. I mean, I thought the story was going to end with him buying his own winery and having, you know, Cibac Sauvignon or something. And it didn't really get to that. It just seemed like, you know, he was just working at this place, learning the ropes, and we'll see whether it continues or whether he moves on to something else. But if you had to leave the poker publishing business, what would you do?
I would either play Highlight or Chase Tornadoes.
Play Highlight or Chase Tornadoes. I'm going to become an astronaut.
All right.
Yeah. We both got loftier dreams than Joe Cibac, so.
I thought you might jump from space like Felix Baumgartner or something.
No, that's crazy, man. That's
awesome.
A perfectly good rocket ship. What the hell is he jumping out of the plane for? The rocket for? That'll make no sense at all.
I've always had this thing about tornadoes. I don't know what it is. I've never actually... I've seen a few...
It's probably because of Helen Hunt and Bill Pullman.
Yeah, I like watching the cow go by the windshield.
Yeah.
No, but really, I mean, we live here in Florida, and you know, they happen here a lot. Most of them are just water spouts, and some of them just touch down for a second. But I've never actually seen one in front of me. Like, I would love to just see one. I mean, I don't want people to get hurt. I don't want to be destruction. I don't want to get killed. But it's just something thrilling about a tornado to me. And I always wanted to, like, go to Kansas for a week and join one of those guys who chase them and just see a few. It would be kind of cool. But, yeah, that's what I would do, I think, if we... Tornado, you know, if we didn't have to, if money wasn't a concern, I could do whatever I wanted. I think I would go, yeah, be a tornado chaser.
Interesting. All right, well, the hotline was kind of quiet again this week, but we'll remind folks that number, 813-448-1120, free from your cell phone. Don't worry about any charges there. Go ahead and call, leave us a one-minute pithy clip, and we'll be happy to give you some great prizes. They're just stacking up here in the office, so every week we don't have a hotline, that's more shirts for me. Not really.
Hey, Big Guru writes in for us, longtime listener, cruiser, all-around good guy.
He's a Wisconsin fan.
Hey, Wisconsin lost, right? So you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
He says, you guys seem to mention memorable movie/TV poker scenes on the podcast. I don't remember you mentioning the film In Time, which was at, Justin Timberlake, right? Which he's also, he's going to be in another movie too. That runner that I keep bringing up.
That's right. Yeah.
Inevitably going to bomb. Anyway, he says, but perhaps you did, and I have forgotten. I just watched it, and it does have a memorable no limit hold'em hand. We don't see the hero's cards or any pre turn action, but on the turn, his opponent has the nuts and bets what seems like a large amount. The hero calls. On the river, he puts the hero all in, and the hero literally calls for his life. He will die if he loses the hand. He ends up winning the hand. Here are his thoughts. One, I guess they don't play for table stakes in the future. Two, the hero calls for his life with the second nuts, which seems unwise to me, even if he was getting almost 2-1 on his call. I suppose the filmmakers knew what they were doing and intentionally didn't give him the nuts. And three, the turn bet seems large because it is half of what the hero's bought in for, which was his entire life/net worth/life. But upon closer inspection, only 8% of the pot and 20% of his chip stack. He's 9% to hit his gut shot, so one could argue that calling 8% of the pot is prudent. More evidence the filmmakers knew what they were doing. But when the stakes are this high, I could argue otherwise. Now that's some funny droll humor right there, man.
I love Big Crew. He cracks me up the entire time he's on the cruise.
It's true though. I mean, there are some people, and I won't name names, but there are some people who just seem so married to, hey, it's a good deal, I'm going to call. But yeah, you're going to die if you lose. You know, I don't think I make that call there.
Yeah, that's I'm going to start using that in the forum when we get into it. So, you know, if you called and lost and you died, would you still do it just because you had the odds?
Exactly.
You know, one of those crazy, you know, political extremist arguments.
Exactly.
But, you know, I haven't watched the movie, and no offense, Big Guru, but you're very funny. Leonard does not entice me to want to watch it, but right. I like the point they brought out, the second Nuts, so it seems like the filmmaker knew what he's doing, not just the Nuts, where he would be agonizing over what would be a super easy call, right?
Right. But the premise of the movie, I don't know if you knew about it or not, was everybody, instead of money, you have time. And you have your credits, like, show up on your arm. I didn't see the movie. I just remember the trailer. And I guess your credits show up on your arm in some digital sort of readout. And you can get more time by bargaining or whatever it is. So, but the guy bought in with all of his minutes, you know. So if he lost, he literally just goes dead right there. Because he loses all of his minutes to his buddy or whoever this guy was. So I'm assuming that's what happens here. And that's just, it is crazy. Okay, you're going to risk your entire life. You know, it's like put a gun to your head. And if you lose, you're pulling the trigger and... Wow.
And this might have been one of only five poker scenes in a non-poker movie where the protagonist didn't have a royal flush, right?
Yeah. Or
a
straight
flush.
It always
seems to be the case, right?
Yeah. Straight flush, royal flush, yep. Exactly.
All right, Big Guru, we always appreciate when you contribute to the show, and you've got plenty of swag already. But we'll remind everybody else to send your questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we might send you something wonderful like a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Anti-Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping.
The call to the floor comes from Sean Gentry, a good friend of ours from the Oregon area. He says, we're playing 1-2 No-Limit Hold'em in an Oregon card club. On the flop, player A goes all in from seat 9. Player B in seat 2 thinks about her hand. Player A tries to talk her into calling. B hems and haws. Finally says, I call, softly, and says the room is noisy there, and tosses her face-up hand toward the flop. Dealer didn't hear and thought player B had folded. She then ships the pot to player A. Player A mucks as the pot comes his way. Dealer scoops his cards into the muck, and player B speaks up. This happened very quickly. The floor arrives to see player B's cards face up on the table near the board. Player A's cards are mixed into the muck. Seats 1, 3, and 4 confirm that they had heard player B verbalize her call. Player A suggests that he whisper his cards to the floor and he take them out. What is the proper ruling?
All right, that's what Jody says. He says, it is every player's responsibility to protect his or her hand and rights to the pot. The technical interpretation of the rules dictates player A has a dead hand and no one to blame but himself. Since we want to do what's best for the game and there is a dealer error involved, I would give the pot to player B without the chips from player A's all-in. Dealers are supposed to muck the losing hands and leave the winning hand out until the pot is pushed and the hand is over. Had the dealer done so in this instance, player B would have had a live hand since she had tabled it face-up and player A would still have his cards. In a situation like this, the floor people are tasked with doing what is best for the game. A big portion of this task involves maintaining the integrity of the game. Although most poker players are honorable people, some are not and cannot be trusted to truthfully tell what cards they had. A good floor person will never allow players to whisper their cards to them and retrieve them from the muck.
Oh, man. You know, and the other thing, too, is did the dealer muck the winning hand first and not the hand that folded first? Because if the hand that folded, when he went to reach for those cards, the woman would have said, hey, I called.
Yeah, yeah.
But instead, the dealer folded the winning hand first, that folded, you know, because he folded his hand face down, but right, she knew right. He won the pot, so it's kind of confusing there, too. But I mean, I like Jody's answer. There's no way you can let him whisper. Even if they told you specific suits, I think you're asking for trouble. You know what I mean? If they said, oh, it's the ace of diamonds and the king of queen, you know, clubs or whatever. Yeah, okay, so now we're
sitting
there in time.
Here's the other thing, too, with this. And again, he's talking about honorable people, but
right.
You see your opponent's cards, right?
Yeah.
So why not just... You're not going to... If you lost the hand, you're not going to tell them those cards, right?
Right.
you're going to tell them to other cards and just hope that they happen to be in the funk somewhere.
Exactly.
Of course, you could probably get caught with that, so it's all a matter of risk, and again, how honorable you are to do that in the first place. But yeah, I totally agree. This is like the second or third time we've had a call before where this whisper rule has come up, and it is absolutely ridiculous. But again, this is one of these tough things, and I hate to pick on dealers because I think dealers work really hard and really don't make as many mistakes as it sounds like they do with call the floor. But didn't hear the person verbalize and then clarify. And I guess the problem here is if the player throws the cards face up,
right?
To me, as a dealer, that's a hey, is this a call or is this a fold? Because it's not just. You know, if you throw them in the muck face down, okay, well, it's definitely a fold. But if you throw them face up,
yep.
There's at least an expectation that maybe the hand is live. Now, I know some Hollywooders out there like to throw their hand up and show what they're folding, but at least give you an opportunity to clarify the action at that point. And then you're right, this doesn't seem like normal procedure for them to muck the
winning folded hand. Yeah.
Push the pot before they've mucked. That's really it. It's not so much mucking the other hand, because it sounds like the guy probably mucked his own hand at that point, which is what you would do when the pot's pushed to you, which is, you know, at that point, once you have the pot, I'm giving up my cards.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to muck all the other cards first before you push the pot.
Yep. And the part that gets me is at the top of Jody's explanation, it's every player's responsibility. But at what point am I supposed to let go of my cards then? Nope, sorry. Yeah. I'm not letting my cards go until you start dealing the next hand. You know, or, I mean, when am I supposed to let these cards go? You told me I won the pot. You pushed me the pot. I can wrap my hands around the chips, and I'm giving you my cards. What does this do? Hang on to the cards for an hour? So
yeah, there are a lot of these floors where I definitely think it's the player had a responsibility, and this one, it's very hard for me to criticize player A here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually had the situation at a card room a month or two ago. I was playing, and they awarded me the pot. Before she pushed the pot, she asked for my cards. I'm like, you're pushing that pot to me first, and then I'll give you my cards.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not pushing the pot to you. Do you give me the cards? And we had like this standoff. And I'm like, I'm correct here, but whatever. There didn't seem to be any controversy, so I gave her my cards and took my pot, and it was fine. But it would be interesting had I. Yeah, conceded to her.
Yeah,
gave her my cards, and then a situation like this came up, and then I would still be the bad guy there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough. Very tough.
But yeah, tough situation.
We never have easy call floors.
No, that's why we have them.
All right, Sean, we appreciate you setting that in, and we are going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com, and remember to send your call the floor questions to podcast at antiupmagazine.com.
All right, the Red Rock Casino Resort Spa in Las Vegas will host our next Anti-Up Poker Tour event January 21st to the 27th. Scott's going to be there. Come out and smack him in the head. And also take your chance at making the cover of Anti-Up Magazine. Special Anti-Up room rates are $89. And you know what? You can get more details to all of our tour events at antiuppokertour.com.
And the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic is now accepting booking for the Antia Poker Tour World Championship event, July 28th to August 3rd at the luxurious all-inclusive resort. 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $100, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Antia Magazine. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children will make this a great poker and or family vacation this year. More information at antiupmagazine.com/worldchampionship, including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs.
And don't forget, it's coming up quick. Jonathan Little is going to be our pro on the February 4th cruise out of Port Canaveral. And you know, of course, we're past our rate guarantee deadline, but you can book as soon as possible, and we'll still try to get you the best possible rate. And we're also sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa this year. So get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Daytona Beach Country Club, and Seneca Salamanca at antiupcruises.com. What happened on the news desk? I know it's slow, but I bet you some stuff happened this week.
We squeezed enough news out to have a news desk this week.
Okay.
All right, Texas State Senator Eddie Rodriguez has filed the Texas Poker Gaming Act of 2013, which would legalize poker in the state's paramutual facilities, bingo halls, and tribal lands, but would ban online poker and the use of electronic tables.
Does this have a chance?
I don't know. The stories are in. Pretty much just said it's been introduced. I think they've been trying this for years there. So I'm going to guess the fact that they put this online poker ban in there is a way to kind of get support from some folks and try to get it through. I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of states that have added poker in the last year or two from competition perspective, and certainly Texas. I mean, a lot of those players go up to Oklahoma, Louisiana, yeah, New Mexico. And really, the bigger problem and not a problem, but the bigger issue in Texas is the home games there. Yeah. So it seems like a no-brainer to me, but then again, I'm in the poker industry. So.
Well, you know, they seem to just not be able to let go of the Wild West days and the old home road games and all that stuff with shotguns on the roof. And, you know, they seem not, and it's a conservative state, so it'll be interesting to see if it gets through. It'd be great if it got through, because that's a huge market.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. PokerStars has started offering tournaments with its Zoom format, where as soon as you fold, you're sent to a new table with a hand waiting. The format has been hugely popular with cash players.
I miss PokerStars so much.
It's funny, because I think when they were starting their own thoughts of doing this before they bought Full Tilt, there was like some rumblings about, hey, you're copying our thing, and there's infringement, and there's going to be... And then they bought Full Tilt anyway, so now they own the...
Problem solved.
They own the assets, so that's all you got to worry about.
And actually, I've never played either the Zoom or the Rush, so I've always wanted to. And so I'm imagining it's going to be something that could be offered for the Pape series. So,
yeah.
Of course, I'm sure when they plan a Zoom tournament, it'll be on one of the many days I'm on the road and can't play, but be hopeful. But it sounds fun. I really like the concept of it.
Yeah, it's weird with Papes, though. I mean, it's like, how many tournaments are there? You know, if you got seven people show up for Papes,
oh, that's true.
You keep playing the same people and same, tables, you know, right? I mean, I don't know what to do.
So, but that's a good question, though. What happens when you get down to
I know. Is it
I guess you don't Zoom anymore,
you
right?
You don't Zoom anymore? Or do you do Zoom? You're just that you're playing a ton of hands against the same people.
Could be.
Huh. That's weird.
I don't know.
Isn't that weird?
Well, it's in beta testing, too, so maybe that's part of the reason it's taking so long is for them to figure out a way to make it work properly.
I'm sure someone will let us know, because they've probably played it on Full Tilt before Full Tilt went under, and they know what it's like, because we never played it, because we banned ourselves from
Full Tilt. But did they have Rush tournaments on Full Tilt? I mean, I didn't know.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I think they did. But I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe they did.
It seems like a big deal that they've been doing it with a cash game format.
Yeah,
it
cash
seems
games
to
only,
work
yeah.
better with it.
Yeah, they may not have had a tournament, you're right. But I want to know how that answer. I want to know how that goes.
All right, and finally, British poker pro Roberto Romanello.
Hey, not too bad.
Ah, look at that. I'm almost Italian.
That was pretty good. Have yourself a sausage sandwich.
We'll debut his new tournament format, Multi-Prize Pool Poker, January 10th at Dusk Till Dawn Casino. The idea allows three different buy-in levels for each tournament. Players who buy in for the lowest price are only eligible to win the prize pool that everyone contributes to, while players who buy in for the two higher buy-ins will compete for those prize pools in addition to the main pool.
Hmm. What do you think about this? I mean, I like it. I like the idea that you can win more money because you're willing to pay for more money, and the other guys, they're not willing to pay for that much, so they don't get to win that much, but they all get to play against each other, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like the tournament equivalent of overs, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, let people play for higher stakes if they want to. You know, I think the overs work because they work well in smaller rooms, you know, where you don't get enough people to play both a high limit and a low limit, so you put people at the same table and make both people happy. So I kind of like that concept with it. And I'm sure there's a lot more detail. I know there's a lot more detail in Poker News Daily where I saw this and probably some other places. But my question would be, I mean, overs, you know, because there's some kind of something that designates you as an over, right?
Yes.
I forget what it was, a button or something.
It was a button, yeah.
But do you have that same thing in the tournament? So
yeah, I was wondering that myself. That's a great point.
Is how does the tournament clock work with that? You know, are you able to break it down to 36 people left for the main pool, 20 for the second pool, and 10 for the first pool?
Yeah,
but then you don't even know who's who, right?
And then yeah, like you said, even playing against these people, am I playing against a guy who satellited in, and or am I playing against a guy who's a consummate pro who's got a bunch of money, or am I playing against somebody who just, you know, doesn't care because they only had to buy in for $50, and you know, I'm playing for 300, you know, buy in or. Oh, man, a lot of ifs.
Yeah.
A lot of ifs, but definitely something that keeps the game interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. I always like innovation, so we'll see how it works. And hopefully some of our British listeners can go at the Dusk Till Dawn and play it and let us know what they think.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's a new year. That means a new O'Malley's Move. Here we go, part one.
and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're seated at a $1, $2, no limit hold'em cash game. The action's been fairly stable all night, not too many maniacs, and our cards have been running fairly even. The blind's post, and it's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who makes it $8 to go. A standard raise. This opponent is a pretty savvy player. She knows the game well and plays solid. This raise here is pretty tough to read. It could be a legitimate hand, like jacks or ace-king, or it could be some kind of a steal with 7-6 suited, or even some kind of trash. Interestingly enough, we go through all this in our head before we even look down at our cards. The 5 of hearts, 5 of diamonds. Yeah, we call. We'll have position the whole way, and we outchip her roughly 300 to 250. The blinds fold, and bingo, the flop comes the 10 of spades, 10 of hearts, 5 of clubs. There's $19 in the pot, and our opponent takes her time before checking. Normally, we'd want to check here also. But if she has something like low suited connectors, we're not getting anything else out of her anyway. If it's ace-king or ace-queen, we're pretty sure she'd take a flyer on a turn, as well as any pairs greater than fives. So we lead out for $10, which is our standard bet. She calls, $39 in the pot, and the turn is, yuck, the 10 of diamonds. Once again, our opponent checks. Pretty tricky. Is she really that strong that she feels she can give us a free card? Or is she hoping to hit a Broadway card on the river to boat up herself? We check right behind. The pot stands at $39, and the river is the 3 of spades. This time she carefully counts out $25 and puts it neatly into the pot. What do we do?
All right, last week we asked you to send us your predictions for the great year 2013, which is now upon us.
It's a great year.
Well, I'm a positive guy. You want me to say this really crappy year that just started and
just
we got
the year.
363 more days to slog through?
It's, you know, what are you, like Sylvester Stallone's mom? Or who was that one?
Has it not been great so far for the first 36 hours of it?
All right, fine. Fine, a couple of days in, and it's a great year.
Jeez. All right, well, several of you were happy to oblige with some terrific responses, so we'll let her read through some of those, laugh a little, and then we each have some of our own, right?
Yeah.
All right, we'll get started here with AMP88 National Guard, big Dale Earnhardt Jr. fan. He says, the federal government won't pass an online poker bill. Nevada sees unprecedented population growth.
That's pretty funny. I agree with the first half, and the second half is pretty funny. But he's right. I was gonna, you know, we make our own predictions, but one of them I was gonna put on there was that, you know, online poker is just, it's not going to happen this year either. Just because it hasn't happened up till now, so it's a safe bet to say it won't. But I agree with him. I don't think it's gonna happen.
No,
I really don't. And you know, especially with Kyle retiring, right?
It's true. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Michael Young, our Maryland and really our Mid-Atlantic ambassador, writes in and says, Maryland will have poker at its casinos. Well, that was a pretty obvious one, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not going to pick on our good friend Mike there. I know he's excited about this, but that's kind of saying, like, Scott Long's going to mangle a word in the poker cast. You're not really putting yourself out there. No real risk involved in that one. But that being said, I know he's very excited. We're very excited to see poker in Maryland and looking forward to seeing what it means up there.
That's pretty good.
All right, Ken Allard, you know, our great our chef that won the big Chris Moneymaker Prize, right?
Yeah.
He says, Scott Long's name will remove from the Hendon-Mom database after they find out that he won the tournament with 9 of clubs.
And he only won $120 anyway, so.
You know, Ken, that's specifically why I didn't upload the winning photo as my profile photo there. I didn't want to give him any proof.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, if they do, though, I'm going to have them take down John Dolan's page, too, our Annie Up Player of the Year.
Yeah, because, you know, because when you're putting out 45, 50,000 copies of a magazine, there's no proof there with a photo of you in it. Zorag says, I won't play a single hand of online poker. Meaning
you know
him.
What? I believe him.
Not him, meaning him.
Yeah. I absolutely believe him. He's one of those very dedicated folks.
I believe it.
Dedicated to something different every week, but very dedicated. But, you know, he's still sticking around listening to the show and stuff, so I appreciate that.
That's all that matters.
All right, Gary Rawson. Hey, online poker's on everybody's mind this year.
Yeah.
Right? Says, Poker Stars New Jersey will be the first legal online poker site, and also by the end of the year, other states will join making the mega lotto of online poker.
Hmm. That's one that seriously could happen. I think that one.
The mega lotto or the Poker Stars being the first?
No, I mean the whole prediction.
Really?
I think the whole prediction could happen.
Here's the thing is, I don't want to fire a hole in Gary's very optimistic bucket here, but we're going to have online poker in Nevada before anything happens in New Jersey.
Okay.
So that first part, very unlikely to happen. Okay. Now, that being said, it's possible the Poker Stars will have an online poker site by the end of the year.
Perhaps he means Poker Stars will be the first legal online poker site in New Jersey.
In New Jersey? All right, I'll
Maybe
give him
he
that.
Means that.
I'll give him that.
But, you know, I wonder now.
But even that, I don't know, because Caesars Entertainment just got approval in Nevada. So, you know, they would be able to roll out their New Jersey one very quickly, I think. So
that's true. We'll see. We'll see
but
what
hey,
happens.
But we're having fun here, right? Yeah, so we're going to let them win, right?
That's right. All right, David Bloomberg. I predict that in 2013, hopes will rise that online poker will be legalized in the U.S., only to be dashed later when nobody can reach a deal. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement that nothing's going to happen. I don't know whether I'm in agreement that hopes will rise. I think some of our very optimistic people out there may think that and get their hopes all rising. Well, but my hopes aren't rising.
Here's what's going to happen. They're going to actually come to an agreement. They're going to have something, but they're not going to have a law to attach it to. Because Congress isn't going to pass any laws in 2013.
I mean, they couldn't even solve the fiscal cliff until the last, actually, not in the last minute, way past
the Yeah,
last.
Past the last minute, when they weren't supposed to even pass it.
The most important thing ever in the world, and they couldn't have come to agreement on. So, I'm sure online poker will be a breeze for them.
I would have loved to have seen Harry Reid attach it to that. That'd have been awesome.
All right, our last two submissions are multiple ones. These people are the ones that invested on that a big crystal ball, a Sharper Image.
Yes.
Not the one you get at Walmart, right?
Right.
So Mark Wittick, number one, says, Greg Raymer will win another Heartland Poker Tour main event. He has figured out the structure and knows what to do at each level. That I totally agree with.
Yeah, that might happen.
I mean, here's the thing about the Heartland. I don't know how much I've talked about this on the show, but I mean, years ago when we were up in Chicago for one of those great charity events that Kirk and folks do, we were talking to this husband and wife that do very well in Heartland, and they essentially said, yeah, we figured out how to play this structure.
Yeah.
And that's why we're so successful, and I think he's right. Greg is a very sharp guy, and I think he's figured out how to do this, and obviously he's a very good pro on top of that, so he's got a lot of things working in his favor, and... he certainly hasn't won his last Heartland Poker Tour event.
That's true. Okay, he also says someone in Nevada will play a hand of online poker legally in 2013. Illegally in quote marks.
All right, well, he's roommates with Michael Young there. that's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, it's
just
yeah,
a matter of when, but should be very soon. His third prediction, I will win a big pot against Scott in April. All right, bring it on. Of course, he's talking about our Annie Up Poker Tour event up at Running Aces, which
yes.
will be April 12th through the 21st. And certainly I'll be up there looking forward to it. And I am easy to win a big pot off of, so it's very likely that could happen.
His last one confuses me. We will win at least two hands of the week this year. What does that mean?
Does that mean the collective submitters are going to win two hands of the week?
I don't know what that means. I assume that most hands of the week are losers and... Two of them.
That's
will
probably.
Win.
It, yes.
I'm not really sure what that means. Probably should.
Well, we've had a streak winners lately, haven't we? Last week was a winner.
I don't know. They're all winners because at the end of it, we give them some.
They get swag. Absolutely.
So they're all winners in my mind.
All right, Mitchell Kogert.
I'm going to say Kogert.
All right, Mitchell Kogert.
He had a bunch as well, too. His first one, everyone will experience a bad beat.
And the sun will rise tomorrow and water is wet.
I think he was being funny, though, right?
Yeah, of course he is.
We're all going to say, oh, my God.
By his next line, we know he's just being funny, so you can tell by his next line. You want me to read the next line? It's up to you.
Absolutely. You're excited.
Okay, Jennifer Tilly will wear a low-cut blouse at the table.
I think he's shooting 2 for 2 so far, right?
Yeah, I think he's getting the low-hanging fruit, pardon my pun there.
Oh, my gosh. All right, let's see if he goes a little more dangerous with this third one. The World Series of Poker will tell players that they are lucky the World Series of Poker doesn't take more money out of the prize pool.
Oh, man, that's probably pretty obvious, too.
Yeah, I think it's like some the rage over the Caesars Entertainment is simmering, right?
Right.
I don't know when it's going to boil over, but it seems to be simmering.
Yeah.
And I think he's picking up on that.
He says, there will be more politicians talking about legalizing online poker nationwide, but it won't happen. Just BS as usual.
Yeah. He says, Obama Poker Care Act passes.
Poker Care.
Oh, I'm sorry. Obama Poker Care Act passes. Players to the final table tournaments must refund all losing players' buy-ins. Now, see, he's really wrong on this one, because what it means is you're required to play in tournaments, and if you don't play in tournaments, you have to pay a penalty.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's really how the Obama Poker Care Act is going on. I hope there's more politicians talking about legalizing online poker nationwide.
Sure.
I'm sure there will be a lot more politicians talking about legalizing it on a state level. I'm not entirely sure there's going to be a ton of more politicians talking about doing it on the nationwide.
Well, you have to remember that it's a new Congress getting sworn in this week, and a lot more Democrats are there, and Democrats are more likely to talk poker than not, so maybe.
Could be.
Well, we did our own, so I think that, I don't know if we can hold a candle to these, but we did our best. We each do 3. Scott, why don't you start off?
All right. My first prediction is I'm going to make it at least 3 months before I stop updating my travel blog this year. I think last year I made it 1 month.
I didn't even know you still had it.
I know. I stopped updating it.
Oh, my God.
But no, I'm going to make a serious effort here. And again, it's Scott Long Loves to Travel.com and my Twitter handle, Scott Long Travel. I'm really going to be serious about it. I really felt bad that I kind of dropped the ball with it last year, because I did so much amazing travel last year. Lots of it poker related as well, too. And of course, I shared all that on my Facebook page, but I really kind of wanted to share it with more people. So I'm going to do it. And of course, I'm starting right away. I'm getting on a plane to Maine here in a couple hours.
Woohoo!
Low of 10 tonight.
I remember when I used to vacation in Maine, and I used to always come home with, like, you know, the obligatory touristy shirts and stuff. But I had a really nice sweatshirt that said Maine on it, and it was really nice. And I used to wear it all the time in Connecticut when it was colder. And I went to Friendly's, which is an ice cream place.
Oh, yeah.
People don't know.
Oh, Friendly's.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm wearing the shirt, or the sweatshirt, and it says Maine on it. And I have no idea that I'm wearing it. Like, I'm not conscious of the fact that I'm wearing it, because I wear it all the time, so I wasn't even thinking about it.
You thought you were naked.
Yeah, no, but we're sitting at the table, and the waitress comes up to us, and she starts to take our order, and she looks at me, and she goes, are you a maniac? I said, excuse me? She goes, are you a maniac? And I'm like, no, are you? What the hell? And she's like, your sweatshirt. And I'm like, oh, I mean, I never heard of that phrase. You know, I guess if you're from Maine, or you went to the University of Maine or something, I don't know, they call you maniacs. I had no idea, but I was literally like going to pop this woman. I'm like, lady, take my order, will you? I just want my Jim Dandy, you know, whatever.
My Jim Dandy.
And she's just like, are you a maniac? And she looked kind of spooky, too. I thought maybe she was kind of crazy herself, but I loved Maine. I grew up taking vacations and summers in Maine. So
I was looking forward to going to Maine, just not in the dead of freaking winter.
Yeah, you're going in the cold. But
I should mention, too, the folks that I'm going to be out in Biloxi at the Beau Rivage next week, too, for a couple of those events. So if any of our listeners are playing there,
right.
I will be playing the Limit Hold'em and the Omaha 8 next week. So come out and say hi there.
Good luck with that. My first one is a little more serious. Our Antiup Poker Tour main event at Thunder Valley will surpass 500 players.
That's a good over-under line.
Yep.
I like it. I'm definitely going to bet the over.
Okay. Well, that's why I said surpass.
I mean, they had 342 this year.
In a snowstorm.
With a snowstorm.
And it was the very first Antiup tour event. By the time we get back around there, we will have at least five more events, probably more.
Yeah.
And I think people will really recognize what this tour is all about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would think an extra, 158?
Yeah.
Is incredibly possible.
Yeah.
Very good prediction.
Well, a little safe on my side, but also, you know, you never know. You never know, so...
Yeah, it's possible that that Ben out there might add a couple other starting day flights too. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's very possible to get those numbers other ways as well too. So that'd be great. All right. Well, my second one is online poker won't be as huge as people expect it to be when it debuts in Nevada.
Yeah, that's a good bet. Because
you know, I think
a lot of people are
so excited about it. Yeah, exactly. Again, it's I think people keep forgetting this. It's all about player liquidity. Now, there's obviously a lot of people that live in Vegas that play poker for a living. So, I mean, they've got a better shot in a lot of states of getting games going. But there's just not going to be a lot of people out there to play. So,
it's
going to be exciting when that happens. I'm going to be very interested to see how it works out. But I definitely don't think that people are just going to be trampling over each other to move to Nevada to play online poker with 12 other people.
No, exactly. The liquidity is just not there. But we'll see. I hope it does. I'm totally supporting it.
Absolutely.
Just don't feel like it's going to happen. Okay, my second one. The poker world will lose a legend this year. The catch is, I'm just not sure which one.
I think it's going to be the judge's wife from Rounders.
Rounders 2.
You have it in for her from the very beginning. So
it happens in Rounders 2.
She's a dead woman. Yep.
No, really, it's 2013. The 13 sounds like it could be a... You know, an omen.
Yes. Playing the superstitious card. You probably think your cards are destined for you as well, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I'm starting to change my views on that. But, you know, poker legends, you know, they're getting older. Never know. I'm not going to say anyone's name. I'm certainly not going to say Doyle, because Doyle loves that when people predict he's going to die. And then he bets people and wins. So I don't think it's going to happen. But I think someone might die this year that we're going to be like, oh, man. And it's going to be a legend. I have a feeling.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're wrong.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong, too. I just have a feeling. I don't have a Deadpool or anything like that going.
And it depends on how much life credits they put onto their arm, right?
That's right. There you go, right there. See, it comes back full circle there. Love it.
All right, my final one. Antiup fans in Canada and West Coasters who like cruising will welcome Antiup announcements sometime in 2013.
Yeah.
We're pretty close to making some nice big announcements.
Yeah, we hope so. And, all right, my last one. The last non-gray hair on Scott Long's head will join the majority.
I think that happened during this show, actually. So.
It probably did. It probably could have. So another one of my predictions comes true. I'm sorry I took the easy way out on that last one.
Not the easy one. I know I told you this is the home game, but I had to fill out casino vendor form the other day. And for the first time ever, I have listed my hair color as gray.
Yeah, let me ask you, what color was your hair?
I guess it was blonde when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess it became sort of brownish.
It was sort of brownish, right? I could never really figure it out. I guess it was sort of brown.
But I've been gray since college, so...
Yeah.
I mean not as gray as I am now, but I was going gray in college, so...
So the next time you do your license, you're going to make them change it to gray?
Yeah, I guess probably.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually, you know, they're not going to believe I'm 150 pounds or 6'7" or any of the other lies that I have on there. So probably going to get in trouble with it. So I might as well just come clean with all of it, right?
I was just thinking when I started writing this prediction, I thought, you know, I was going to say his last brown hair, you know, joins the majority and turns gray.
But you weren't even sure I ever had a brown hair.
Exactly. I couldn't even sure what the color was of that color of that hair. It's unique. How about that?
It's unique.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Scott.
Thanks, everybody, for sending in your predictions. I hope some of them come true. I hope some of them don't. And I just hope 2013 is a really good year for poker and for everybody in the Antiup Nation.
Hi, this is Hort Hawkins, and I'm listening to Antiup.
Our first hand of the week of the year comes from Mr. Quimper.
What is a quimper?
I don't know. But I'm going to try it on Words with Friends because it's Q-W-I-M-P-E-R. And other than Q-I, it's very hard to come up with words with Q's on Words with Friends that don't have a U right after it. You can never get the U when you have the Q.
Yeah, Q-A-T is a word, the tree.
Yeah, that's true.
But
And now I'm going to try Quimper. Quimper. Because Quimper, I mean, that's... Get that in a triple word score.
Oh, my God. That's like 160 points.
Yeah. Melt the phone right there. All right. So, Mr. Quimper, it was in a $120 buy-in Hold'em tournament.
Okay.
And, a little setup here. On his first table, he was seated in the two seat. He was dealt a great combination. Nice starting hands and favorable flops, building up a decent stack. Sure you were. I was responsible for removing a few players from the tournament, as has the number seven seat. As tables broke, new players were sat.
Let's just get to the hand.
I'm just curious what the right word is.
He's telling us all this stuff. It's got nothing to do with the hand.
I got to figure out where the hand starts. And crippled by the two of us, we avoided each other and targeted the rest of the table. Uh-huh, team poker, I like it. An unspoken truce. Then the worst happened. Our table broke. My new table wasn't as fortunate for me. Poor starting hands, bad flops when I entered pots, and my stack went stagnant. I was very happy when that table broke. I surveyed my new table. Somewhere on the third table now.
All right.
Track it home. There's only one player I was familiar with as I took the one seat. Blinds were in 7 and 8. Blinds were 600, 1200 with a 200 ante. Seat 9 and 10 folded me, and I looked down at 8 of clubs, 8 of hearts.
And it's at this point the dealer says, hey, ante, please. Ante. Ante, please.
Did I get yours? I think I forgot yours.
I forgot yours. What's an ante?
No, I'm pretty sure that was mine. No, yours was over there.
So I'm a little confused. So we are the first to act then. We're going to be first to enter the pot, if we play this hand.
We are the first to enter pot, yes. They're the under the gun and under gun plus two have folded.
Well, you know what? I know we're at a new table and we don't know what these guys are play like. But I don't like to enter a pot first, especially with a made hand like this, without raising. I really don't. I know typically I might limp with eights if I had people behind me or in front of me limping and then, whatever. Or I might call a small raise with eights, hope to have a set and bust somebody or whatever. But in this case, I don't like a limp. I think, there's your whole, I don't know what they're going to play like, so why would I raise? But they don't know what you play like either, so set it up. You're going to be the guy who sits down and raises right away. Who knows? But pocket eights, I think, deserve a raise.
Absolutely. First thing, you got to raise. If you can't raise, then you got to fold, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's times you can get tricky and limp, but I think you're setting yourself up for trouble when you try to get that.
Yeah, a middling pair like this, if at best a middling pair, you're going to see all kinds of overs with, and then probably, and with blinds, who knows what they have. They're getting in for free, so... I want to flush some people out and take control of the first hand I am at this table. Let them know who's the boss.
All right, boss man. What are you raising to?
Let's see. The blinds are 6 of 12 plus. There's an ante, so some extra money out there. I wouldn't. I don't know what my starting stack is though. That's the problem.
Looks like around 46K.
Oh, that'd have been nice to know. Okay, so.
Well, now you know it. You haven't enacted yet.
So I have about 46K. So
put your wine in.
I got no problem raising to 4 grand here.
Wow, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Wow.
That's no fun at all.
Man. All right, I'll say 3,900 then.
And here's the thing. I kind of do this shorthanded thing. Again, I'm not a pro. I'm not aspiring to be a pro.
Right.
Though I have won a horse tournament for a card. But I kind of like the 3X, and then I just kind of round up with annies. Yeah. So 3,600, I'll throw an extra 400. It's a nice even 4,000. I know that's terrible, but that's
kind of... Yeah, but still, it got you to a decent number there. I mean, some people will bet less than three times.
Actually, less, with pretty good D&Es. But, with that much in our chip stack,
Yeah, less than 10% of our stack is not...
Don't know how much everybody else has, but that could be a pretty significant raise and really succeed in driving some people out.
I totally agree.
If that's what you want to do. Which I think we do.
I think we do with eights. I think we do. I think we want to set the tone, but also get the raggy hands out.
Yeah, because here's the thing. The flop is very likely not going to hit us, right? So we're going to have to represent something, which means we're going to have to put more money in with a hand that's vulnerable at that
point.
Yes, so the fewer people that we have to put in get off on the flop, the better off we are. Right?
Plus, we're likely going to be out of position for the rest of the hand, so
very
we want to at least take control of the hand.
All right, so we're in agreement raising the 4,000. Let's see what our hero does. He says, shell-shocked from my last table, my lack of familiarity with my new one, and first hand on the table, I call the 1,200.
I was just saying that. It's weird. I know you don't know how these people play, but they don't know how you play either. So, I would just raise. I don't like the call there. I might even fold before I called.
Here's the thing. First hand of the table, I could justify a call as long as I'm doing it to set mine.
Right.
And if the flop comes and it's dangerous, boom, I can be out for 1,200, and then maybe I'll learn how the table works. I mean, I guess there is something to be said about figuring out how the table works. I also like your thought that, you know, I mean, I guess the difference is with what you're saying is we got moved to a new table. I'm assuming that those people were already there, right?
Yes, it seems
so. Might be only just us, me, and our hero, and maybe.
Well, he says there's only one player he was familiar with, so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I mean, those people already know how to play against each other, or at least have more of an idea. So we are taking the risk trying to play against players that we don't have any information at all on.
Yeah, but again,
but I wouldn't get frisky after calling them.
Yeah, you're sitting down with 46 grand. You obviously are doing decent in this tournament, so there's nothing wrong with raising, and you know, obviously you've played pretty well up to this point, so. You know, I don't mind creating an image right away when I sit down. There's no reason not to. And just because I don't know how people play, I'm not going to not play a hand optimally. You know, I want to play it optimally. I think the optimum thing to do here is to raise. And if you miss the flop, it doesn't matter because you showed strength first. So they don't know what you have. Let's just get out the riffraff.
And you're right, too. They don't know you at all either. So, You know, while we're a little apprehensive about who we're playing against, they're obviously apprehensive about who we are either, too. So,
yeah.
Unless they have a real strong hand, they're probably not going to play the first one until we actually show something, right?
Yep.
All right. So the table folds to the small blind who completes and the big blind who checks. So we're on to the flop. The small blind has about 32K. The big blind has between 47 and 50K. And we have about 45K after our call.
See, now this is exactly... It had to happen because you only called, so there's nothing else that could happen if everyone folded to these blinds. You know what I mean? If this is exactly what we don't want to happen, we don't want to be in a hand with two blinds who got one a free look at the flop and another one got an incredibly discounted look to see the flop, and especially got good odds on his money. This is exactly what we don't want, and this is what happens. You know, and there was nothing else you could do about it by just calling, because the only other thing that could have happened for you now is to have more players call. Have a bigger pot to set mine so you're getting decent odds, or have somebody raise and then you're looking at probably folding. So, or calling and then being out of position the rest of the way. So, really, this is the kind of stuff that you're hoping to avoid. You really don't want to go up against the blinds, even though you have position on them. You know, they have any two cards now for a cheap price, and anything that comes they can represent or hit, and you'd be guessing the rest of the way.
Yeah, and we couldn't really predict that this was going to happen. But the problem we have now is that it's going to be very tough for us to represent an ace or a king or something like that that we should have raised with from our position, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of the value of being the first one in, is it's not just that we have a pocket pair that could flop a set or be top pair on a low board, but we could also represent a lot of other different hands. Right now, we kind of limited what we can represent against these blinds.
That's a great point.
All right, so three-handed, pot is 5,600, flop is the six of clubs, eight of diamonds, five of spades. So we have a top set, but the board with the straight there.
Yeah.
Good thing it's rainbow, at least, though. But the small blind's going to lead out for 1,500, the big blind raises to 4,000.
Jeez. Well, we have top set. You know, I think, you know, it's very possible that somebody has a straight or two pair here. We're hoping for the two pair, but it's very possible somebody has 7-9. Big blind could have 7-9. Big blind could have any cards you could come up with now, because he didn't have to pay to see the flop.
Absolutely.
So, but top set's pretty strong. I don't know if I'd raise yet. I think I'd want to see another card, keep the pot manageable, because you don't want to go broke in an unraised pot, as Doyle will say. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't mind.
We neutered ourselves by our lack of action on the
flop. Yeah, because if we had raised, we wouldn't be against random cards likely, and if we were, they'd never put us on top set, so we could bet, making it look like a continuation bet. Then you can get all in with somebody with top set, and even if you're behind, you still have outs. So, I just don't like... I think now I'm really just going to call, which is kind of weird with top set, but I want to see another card before I really make a major decision here.
And you know what's really frustrating about this hand now is we're in position, but we have no ability to do anything with it.
Yeah.
Because no one in... Where we are in the hand, no one can put us on 7-9. And they very likely can't put us on a set either, I don't think.
No.
So, you know, the fact that we're calling is very difficult, I think, for anybody to think that we have anything, which is probably good if they have two pair and we have this the set, but if they have the straight, you know, I mean, it's just, it's,
yep.
we're not able to raise if we wanted to and get any respect for it. Now, maybe that's fine. Maybe, you know, if we decide that we're ahead here, but I think there's a lots of reasons to believe that, that this is going to be a tough hand. We got two more cards to dodge here. If they don't have a straight already, they could get there pretty easily.
Yeah, and a call tells them, does tell them that we could have, you know, that we're you know, drawing to a hand. And a raise could tell them that we set mine and hit it, and we're protecting our hands. So, you know, I don't know if I want to give that information away yet. You know, maybe I'll fill up on the turn or the river, and I won't have to worry about it. But at this point, I think I like just calling here, and maybe that also gets a small blind to call and gets a bigger pot for us if we make our hand that we really want.
I think we're going to do better being cautious here both ways, both saving money if we were behind or getting as much money out of this pot if we're ahead.
Yeah.
All right, so he says the small bet, I think draw or weak hit, maybe mid-pair. The raise tells me the big blind is either drawing on a straight or hit it with, say, 7-9. I cautiously call the 4,000, and the small blind quickly follows. Pot is now 17-6.
Jeez. So, I mean, that's kind of what we hoped for, that small blind would call, just so if we do make our hand, you know, there's more money in the middle. But that's, wow. So, and this is the whole reason you should have raised, and I know we're not, you know, but, I mean, this is why you should raise.
Yeah, we're going to face a very difficult decision on one of these last two streets if we don't improve, I think.
And preflop, of course, I'm going to raise preflop, not last street, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, the turn is the six of spades. And he says, very nice card. Obviously, it is. We have the boat now, so our board is six of clubs, eight of diamonds, five of spades, six of spades.
Yeah, that's a good card, obviously.
It's almost the best thing we could ask for.
Yeah, other than eight.
I mean,
know.
The last eight, right. And he said, I have a big boat, and the small blind was betting a six. He now has trips, and the big blind holds a straight, as I feared, is now no good. Small blind again leads out for 5K. Big blind raises to 12K.
Holy cow. Well, unless it's pocket sixes, we have the nuts. And I'm not
very excited about this
pocket
hand
sixes.
Now.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think we dodged a bullet here. Yeah, if they got pocket sixes, you know... More power to him, right?
Yeah. This
now
could
we've
be,
got three people that aren't going to go anywhere.
This could be a baby full house, smaller than ours, against a straight, you know, like six five or...
5-6, yeah.
Even
absolutely.
6-8 is possible. But that's what it feels like, and there's so much money now. Now I'd come alive and just get it in there. No reason not to. I mean, if that... He raised to 12, and I'm going to make it 36, well, that's all my chips anyway. So... Yeah. I have no reason. There's no way I'm losing somebody here. When somebody bets out again after they bet out last street and got raised and called, now they bet out again, and then another guy raises. I mean, there's no way you're getting at least one person to come along if you shove.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I was going to say I don't know if one of the other players could even fold anyway because of the stacks too. So.
This is what I was talking about. We put ourselves in a bad situation by not being able to raise any of those hands earlier if we raised, and now it's working in our favor. Now we can make that shove, and people might think we're lighter than we really are, which is kind of cool.
Yep.
Now, of course, if you're shoving, it's. I mean, they got to have some respect for you, since the small blind would be out of the tournament, the big blind would be essentially out.
Yeah.
If they call and lost.
I would be happy if just one guy came along. That's a huge pot. If they both came along, fine. I got top boat. The only thing I'm losing to is quads, and if they have quads, more power to them. And it might even be the guy who's shorter stacked, so I might survive anyway. So, really, I think a shove here is fine now. I mean, I know a call is tricky, you know, but I don't know.
What about like a min raise? We'd make it like 24, I mean 30,000. Just to, at this point, I'm not too scared about anybody's hand anymore. I'm trying to get as much money out of these people as possible. I guess I'm worried that a shove might scare out one of them.
Yeah, I think a min raise, if it's going to scare somebody, any raise will scare somebody, I think, whether it's minimum or not. I don't know if somebody can call, like the first guy who bet out, what was it, five?
But it gives the opportunity for one of the other two players to go all in on their own rather than being forced in, like, by us, right?
I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to answer. I mean, I just don't know if I'm going to raise again, either they're going to call or they're going to fold anyway. What's another 12,000? Not even after the 12 that I make it. You know, I don't know.
We have what? We have 40,000 right now. So
right. What I mean is to them, the smaller yeah. stack started with 32. Yeah. So if I make it 24, that guy's broke anyway. So either he's going to call or he's not if I shove.
He's only got 5K in here. I would love to see his other 7K at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'd just be happy with someone coming along. I really feel like the guy who raised again can't fold. So I'm going to get all of his stack if I shove. And then the other guy might come along because he's already got how much invested? Five, then nine. So he's got nine of his 32 plus the original. Yeah, so 12. So that guy's got at least only 20 grand left about. You know, and if he's going to come along.
Yeah, that's my goal is to maybe get him. Because yeah. here's the thing, if you wait until the river.
And it gets really scary looking, he might get away from it.
Exactly. Now at least everybody has hope, right? They got one card left if to think about it. So I definitely want to squeeze some more. I think I'm going to target the small blind here. And so yeah, he's got, what, about
21.
20 left?
Yeah,
so a min raise to 24. I mean, that gets him all in, and maybe the big blind will go over the top after that, and we'll all get it in anyhow, and everybody will be doing it on their own volition rather than us forcing him to.
Yeah, a min raise is interesting, although, you know, if he just calls, and the other guy just calls like he did the last time, you are giving him a chance to get away, whereas if you just shove now, they might think, well, I got the nuts right now, and I'm going to call, but they can get scared on the river, so, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Either way, I think, as long as you're putting more money in, I think you're going to be okay. I would not just call here, though.
Would not just call, absolutely. Okay, let's see. Our hero says, the only hand I have to fade is pocket sixes, which is not likely. I call, planning to sandbag the river. We already talked about the problem there.
Right. Okay.
Small blind calls as well. The pot is now 53.6. Small blind has 16K left. We have 29K, which we plan to get in the pot on the river. The river is the three of spades, so our final board is six of clubs, eight of diamonds, five of spades, six of spades, three of spades. So, of course, any flush draw just got there, the straight still lingers, but both weaker than our eights full. Small blind shoves his last 16,000. We always appreciate that, right? Big blind raises all in for more than I can have. Not a lot to think about here, right?
Yeah, no. At this point, no. I was willing to shove before. I mean, obviously, there's another hand that beats us now, too, a straight flush. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if I'm afraid of those two hands, then I just, you know, that and sixes, I just can't play poker. So, right. You know, you got it. There's too much out there now, and you have too much invested with top boat. You know, you're not folding.
Right. Okay, so we do call. Small blind flips over eight of spades, six of diamonds for the smaller full house.
Jeez.
Big blind shows four of spades, seven of spades with straight flush.
Oh, God. I don't mean to laugh there, Q, but wow. Wow, wow, wow. So when the 4-7 came, he had flopped the straight.
Flopped the straight, so you can't really blame this guy.
Can't blame him. Then he redraw.
Got to see that flop for free. Flop is straight. He's not going anywhere in this hand. Obviously, you know, the action on the turn is probably pretty scary for him. I'm not sure I would have raised on the turn if I was him.
Yeah.
Just my straight flush draw. Straight flush draws don't get there very often.
Right. And, you know, and even a flush now isn't even the max because, you know, nuts because of the paired board.
Yeah, exactly. I probably would have just called there. But,
wow.
But we made it easy for him to get there, too, by not raising.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder what would happen had we done what you did, shoved. Certainly, just a min raise for me probably wouldn't have gotten him out. So there's probably lesson there. But if we shoved, I think he would have really had to think about it. Yeah. At that point, he would have to put us on a boat, right? And then the small blind calls, too.
Which he would have. He's got what seems to be the nuts to him.
Yep.
You know, we might have gotten that straight flush draw out. And, of course, if we had raised preflop, we would have just taken down a nice little small pot and not had to worry about it, probably. Yeah. But, instead we're out of the tournament to a straight flush. Wow, what a cold deck.
Yeah, And I'll do my normal resorts oriented discussion here too. I mean, obviously we wanted all the money in this pot, so
yeah.
You know, we're going back to the hand now and talking about how we could have won it, but ultimately we won all the money in the pots, and that's what happened, and we got unlucky and lost. But we would still be in the tournament had we raised preflop. That's the lesson, I think, right?
Yeah, likely would have been likely a 4-7 of spades is not calling a raise.
Or the 8-6. So we or the 8-6. Take the blinds, yeah. and first hand at the table, we wouldn't have got any information, but we would have picked up 1,800 plus 3,800.
Yeah, 3,800, so... Yep. So that's the
about 10% of our stack. That's
the lesson learned here is don't worry about not knowing the players at your table. If you pick up a hand, play it optimally. That's the way I think.
All right, Mr. Quimper, we appreciate your very, very sad hands. I do feel bad for you. But maybe this will make you better. Download the Chinese 13 card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner. Enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes stores. Remember to send us your hands of the week and other various things that you'd like us to use on the show, the podcast at antiupmagazine.com.
Thanks to the Anti Up Nation for sending in their 2013 predictions. Let's hope the good ones come true. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.